Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, Friday Filmmaker Edition with Paul. Welcome back, Paul.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
We are on the Sofia Coppola tip still today with The Bling Ring, and I feel like we should just go ahead and say what we were talking about, that you didn't print out notes and you were worried that this was not going to go well.
Yes. So let us know in the comments, sound off at the end of this episode if it's terrible.
Confirmed. Did not go well. But why didn't you print out notes or make notes, or did you make notes?
I just had a tough time with this one, putting my thoughts down cogently or something. And I just felt like seeing how it went, you know?
It's a bit of a confounding movie.
You know, it's I think part of it is having gone through these other Sofia Coppola films, mm-hmm. I feel like with each of them we've done already, I've always had a sense of having been able to wrap my head around what those other films are doing much more clearly.
Yeah, agreed.
Either what the thesis or the argument of those films are.
For sure.
This one, I have a tough time really nailing that down, not necessarily to the film's detriment, though.
Yeah, I had, here's my history. This film came out in 2013. I think I saw this in the theater, if I'm not mistaken.
I did too, yeah.
Emily and I did. And wasn't sure what to think about it at the time, and it came across as sort of, without sounding harsh, like, you know, B-level Sofia Coppola. And it still may reside there. But I definitely got a lot more out of it last night after watching it again through this lens. And I like the movie. I don't love it because it's hard to like a movie with so few – it's very – and I think it's supposed to be this way. That's what I finally came to. It's very surface level, very what's the word I'm looking for? It's not very substantial.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the point, because these people are vapid.
Vapid was a word I was thinking
awful
of.
Creatures.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get into a movie like that when there's no one that you can identify with or root for, especially being my age. It's like, oh, boy, this is that generation where they're living their life – this fake life through Instagram and Facebook. And it was it's hard to say you love a movie like that, but I think that's kind of the whole point.
Yeah. I also, when I saw it in 2013 in theater, I kind of left the theater thinking, huh, that didn't do much for me at all.
Right.
Like, what was the point? Why did she feel the need to make this movie? And I never really thought about the movie again, until we revisited it today.
Yeah.
And I rewatched it actually twice, two nights in a row.
Oh, really?
And my feelings toward it have increased. I like it quite a bit now, actually.
Yeah.
And I think I agree with what you're saying, that there is this kind of surface level approach to everything intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like that's the way to do a movie like this.
Yeah.
If you're going to talk about this subject, this story, mm-hmm. these people.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's a – and I've seen – it's sort of the constant criticism she gets, which is not critiquing her subject matters who people feel like should be critiqued more heavily. And I've really come to appreciate her tone, which is, you know, she gives a lot – and maybe more so than many other filmmakers – gives a lot of leeway to the viewer to make up their own damn minds about something – and not like being super judgy about her subject matter. And this one, maybe more so than any other, could, you know, be judged.
Yeah, I agree. I think the critique is there. She's just such a subtle filmmaker. She's a filmmaker who doesn't insist upon herself,
mm-hmm.
that it's easy to miss some of the critiques that are present within the film.
Yeah, like the whole thing to me is a critique when you really look at it.
Yeah.
But she's not wagging her finger at it. It's interesting because she utilizes a lot of reality TV techniques very purposefully, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that creates this sort of like slime that you just want to wash off of you at the end of it. But I thought it was super effective. Like, especially one of the things that stands out is her use of the webcam stuff. That one great scene with Mark, where he's like smoking weed
by himself.
Yeah, and dancing in front of the webcam, and it goes on for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And it's really like it's her saying like this is this generation to a degree, and certainly these people to the nth degree.
You know, it's. I did not realize this until this morning. I was just kind of scouring YouTube looking for videos about the actual people in the crime.
Yeah, yeah. And I did some of that.
There's a few of those videos out there, and one of them has a video of the real life Mark, whose name is not Mark in real life.
Yeah.
And he,
what's his name? Paul something maybe?
I say it was Nick.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't know. There's a video of him doing that. She basically took that scene from an exact thing he did.
Oh, really?
There's a black and white like webcam video of him listening to the same song, Drop It Low, and smoking a bowl and kind of singing along, dancing in his room.
So she just recreated
it. She recreated it, which is just crazy to me.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I read the article, the Vanity Fair article, too, that it's based
on. Yeah, I haven't read that yet. I bet it was great.
It's good. And it astounded me how much she just basically adapted that. Like, she doesn't change very much at all aside from the names of the kids.
Right.
And some of the quotes in there, I could not believe are real quotes that she uses in the movie.
Uh-huh.
For example, at the beginning when you hear Emma Watson's character saying, I'm a firm believer in karma and this situation was visited upon me as a learning, you know, blah, blah, blah. I want to lead a country for one day.
Well, no, the I have to read it verbatim.
Yes, do go ahead.
Not the whole line, but the very last line there is so great. I want to lead a country one day for all I know. That for all I know at the end is so perfect.
That is a real quote from the girl she's based on.
I believe it.
100%.
Yeah.
And also another quote that's real is the character Rebecca, kind of the ringleader in the movie. In the movie when she is talking to an investigator and the investigator says she asks if they've interviewed any of the victims.
Yeah,
and he said yes. She says, what did Lindsay say? That is also a real quote.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a couple of lines at the end there that what did Lindsay say was just like, you got to be kidding me. And because she sort of lit up.
Yeah.
When they were like, oh, my God, you actually talked to Lindsay?
Yeah.
She says, you know, well, you know, if I give everything back, can you just let me go?
Yeah. And that sort of reaction apparently was pretty real.
Yeah.
Like her denying everything and then realizing she's caught and then thinking, oh, if I give all the stuff back, I'll somehow get away or that'll give me leverage.
Right, which is just – it's emblematic of the entire movie, which is that these kids are so privileged. And I know people throw that word around a lot, but this is the true definition of privilege.
Absolutely.
Even though they're at the bad kid school. Mm-hmm. They are so privileged and they have so little of a barometer for – ethics and doing right and wrong. Like, you never get a sense even afterward that they felt like they did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're so privileged that they have no idea that this is even – they consider it shopping. They even call it that. Let's go shopping.
And the fact that
– it's reprehensible. It's so gross.
And the fact that in some ways maybe they kind of got what they wanted, which was a form of being a celebrity, a D-list celebrity.
Uh-huh.
Because if you also kind of read about the real life people this happened to, most of the sentences they were given at the end,
they're pretty light,
and most of them did not. You know, one character is sentenced to 4 years. In real life, she served one of that.
Yeah, and that was one of the longer ones.
Yeah,
I think some of them served like 30 to 60 days.
Yeah, the Nikki character, Emma Watson's character, she's given 6 months in real life and in the movie, and she served 30 days in real life. She was in a cell with Lindsay Lohan in a cell block with Lindsay Lohan.
Right. But, I could hear her crying.
Yeah. But it just goes to show you that, I mean, there's a critique in and of itself when you think about people who are sentenced to much longer prison terms for possession of marijuana, for example, especially people of color. You know, we can go down that road, which is absolutely true.
1,000%.
When these privileged Calabasas L.A. people with wealthy families can kind of get off with just
can
a
steal
slap on
$3 million worth of stuff. You know, it was not a light crime. And you get the feeling that they thought they won't miss it, which is partially true.
Yeah.
And that's also a whole other thing, mm-hmm. is that the opulence is so much that, like, they're not missing a $50,000 handbag.
Yeah.
It was probably, I think, several of them got broken into 3, 4, 5 times.
Paris Hilton, yeah,
and
especially.
Didn't notice for a while, and then didn't even want to say anything after they did notice.
Mm-hmm.
I think Paris Hilton was aware and didn't even report it to the police until like the 3rd or 4th time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, because to her, it was like not worth the hassle of the press.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, she'll just buy new shit.
Exactly. And her leaving her key under her mat,
yeah,
was real.
That really happened.
That really happened.
Yes, but the door was even unlocked. That's what I read. Was
really?
The key was under the mat, but they didn't even need it.
Jeez.
And that's the whole thing. It's like they opened cars that were open,
mm-hmm.
and rifled through them. They never broke a window.
No.
All these doors are open.
Yeah.
These people live this luxurious lifestyle in the hills, and, you know, they feel safe behind their walls. They, yeah, you know, they would track them down when they're out of town. Let's find out how to get in on Google Earth.
Yeah.
And they made it look so easy because it was.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's funny because part of this, what's interesting about watching this movie a few years removed,
uh-huh.
is kind of how it is a time capsule, a little bit of this very transitional time, I would say, when,
yeah,
you're kind of going from the aughts to the 2010s,
mm-hmm.
and how the idea of just being able to Google a celebrity's address,
right,
was available. And it's not like you had to be some kind of computer hacker to, no, find this stuff.
No it's sleuthing going on.
Super easy.
Yeah.
And you can also, yeah, track when a celebrity is out of town because, yep, oh, they're going to be in Miami for a club opening or something.
Yeah, and it was also the ubiquity of home security cameras.
Yeah.
Like a couple of them had them, and that's how they eventually get undone.
Yeah.
But it's not like now. Like now, like, I mean, I have home security cameras.
Yeah.
And I'm a F-list celebrity. No, lower than that. I'm more
give yourself.
I'm more like a P-list. No, but everyone has these now all over the neighborhood,
yeah,
which is, you know, I don't know how people feel about that. I think it's kind of great because people can look out for one another and stuff, yeah, like that. But
listeners, sound off. What level of celebrity is Chuck?
Oh, good Lord. So maybe we should just really quickly tell people what this movie is in case you don't know and you like to listen, even though you haven't seen it. It tells the true story of a series of robberies from the Bling Ring. These five, it ended up being more than five in the end.
Yeah, only five, I think, are shown in the movie, but there were a few more people in real life. In,
yeah, and it showed a couple of people, fringe people in the movie, like the one guy, Latino guy, breaking in,
mm-hmm.
and he got sentenced, but they didn't really focus on them too much.
Right.
Sort of focused on the four ladies and the one guy. And they did change the names, as you said. The one guy was Nick Perugo. But it's really interesting to read the real stuff. I'm going to read the Vanity Fair article, but sure, I read a bunch of articles about this stuff. And it just, like, I think Sofia Coppola was the perfect person to make this into a movie because she deals in – she loves shooting pretty things and pretty people.
Mm-hmm.
And some people criticize her for that. But to me, that's just her aesthetic and the world that she's in. So that's fine. But it's always the pretty stuff and the fractures within. It's never just a love letter to anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's always like these people are really kind of broken in a lot of ways. And not like, oh, feel sorry for them necessarily. Like I said, I think she gives the viewer a lot of leeway to feel how they want to feel. She's not there holding your hand and really force feeding you and saying you should feel this way about this thing.
Yeah, and I think what makes her a good director for this is because she's not above taking enjoyment in luxurious things. You've seen it, uh-huh, in Marie Antoinette. You've seen it in all her movies. She's worked with fashion people before. She's shot fashion. Like, she, to a certain extent, enjoys the fashion world, mm-hmm, and ideas of luxury and nice things.
She's a rich kid.
Yeah, she's a rich kid. And so that's why she's so good, because she can actually, while still critiquing all of this,
uh-huh,
she cannot sort of turn up her nose at the fact that, yeah, there is kind of pleasure in having nice things. You,
yeah,
know?
It's an interesting perspective, because usually you would see a movie about this stuff that's, you know, made by someone who came from more meager backgrounds who would really have a pretty scathing critique of...
They'd eviscerate it, and rightfully so, probably,
yeah,
you know? But this is just an interesting take.
Agreed.
You know?
Totally agree. The movie starts out with that great sleigh bells needle drop.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, she's known for her music and using popular music in her movies. But it's always sort of that aesthetic she has, the sort of dreamy kind of Britpop. In this movie, she totally abandons all that.
Yeah.
With this very hard edge. I don't even know what you call this stuff because I'm so old and unhip.
I just think it's very, very contemporary pop and
hip
hop.
Pop and hip hop. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, it's all very hard edged.
Yes.
None of it is soft around the edges.
Like that Sleigh Bell song is great because it's at the beginning and it's all quiet. And mm-hmm. then as soon as they go into the house, you hear the guitar note.
Yeah.
And it almost sounds like an alarm.
Yeah, it does.
It sounds like, oh, they've tripped the alarm. But no, it's just the music playing, yeah, which is a nice little joke there. Yeah.
Yeah, and it shows that perfect robbery with that perfect music playing. And like right away, she starts intercutting some of the interview, I guess like deposition stuff.
Yeah.
So you know the deal. And you may have even heard the story going in. So you know they get caught eventually. And what I was thought was fairly remarkable last night was if you strip out the millennial social media aspect and sort of the contemporary music, it follows the note of a crime drama.
Yeah.
Like kind of all the stuff, like,
yeah.
You know, you're riding high, you can get away with anything, greed gets the best of you, you yeah. go too far, you get pinched. It's like, I mean, it's fucking Goodfellas in a
yeah,
way at the
is.
Same time.
It is.
Yeah. You know?
That's a good point. Yeah, it really does. I mean, she does some interesting structural things, but ultimately the template is a template we've seen before.
Yeah. Emma Watson's great. She kind of steals the movie.
Man, I've read some people who've critiqued her performance.
Oh, man, I thought she was great.
She's so good. And if you listen, so the girl she's based on is named Alexis Nyers.
Right.
And if you go on YouTube, you can see videos of her, and she sounds exactly like Emma Watson.
Yeah.
And this,
so she's not overdoing the Valley
She's not overdoing it. And this girl actually was, at the time, right around the time she was arrested, she was shooting a reality TV show.
Right.
For E!
With her mom and sister and yes. sort of fake sister, right?
And there's a great clip of her. So at some point after she's, you know, been arrested and all this stuff, where she's calling up some writer who wrote a story about it, and she's hysterical, crying, and she's telling this writer, you put so many lies in there, you got so many things wrong, you said that at the court I was wearing 6-inch Louboutin heels, and it's not true, I was wearing 4-inch BB something or other shoes. Like, that's what she's mad about,
man.
That she got the style of shoe wrong.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's...
Well, that interview with her at the end with her mom, played by Leslie Mann, who was kind of great in this as well, is so good because Leslie Mann keeps jumping in there. She's like, Mom, you know, this isn't about you. And it's just you wonder if any of them learned any lessons. I mean, I tried to find some follow-up stuff. Apparently, Alexis Nyers and I think both of her sisters got really bad into drugs, like heroin.
Yeah.
And have cleaned up and I think are on a better path in life. But can a zebra really change his stripes that much?
Well, yeah. And you've seen quotes of various people involved in this sort of giving lip service to either they've become very spiritual or they've done charity work.
Right.
And they sound like how, honestly, celebrities sound when they talk, trying to make themselves sound like real people, you know?
Right.
I've got my charity, I've got this, I've got that to sort of keep me grounded, but it's that like LA version of being, air quotes, grounded.
Yes.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Oh boy. That's a whole other thing. And I also thought, you know, it was interesting how it wasn't even about, I mean, they did get cash, but it was all as a means to live a lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like a typical robbery thing. It was, and maybe that's always the case, but, and maybe it's this particular lifestyle that seems so offensive and so wasteful, but they were robbing this money just so they could throw it away on bottle service at the club and be a part of the people that they were robbing. Like, you get the picture that if one of these people would have come home, they would have wanted to be friends with them more than, you know, like run away and try and escape. They try and twist it into like, well, can we hang out?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not robbing out of necessity.
Oh, of course not.
It's so funny, too. A lot of the times you see them go into the houses, they're already dressed very stylishly.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I mean, if police did show up, they might be able to talk their way out of it because they're dressed very expensively already.
Yeah.
Like
we're friends.
Yeah,
and
we're friends.
Had a key.
Yeah. I mean, just because they don't have the quote-unquote look of a thief or something.
Yeah, and they never feel threatened. And, like, that's how deep their privilege runs is, I mean, I guess Mark is a little bit like he's the only one that's ever saying, we should probably get out of here. We've been here a long time. The rest of them are, like, rolling around in their beds. And they're not taking a duffel bag and just raking stuff in. They're shopping.
Yeah.
They're like, ooh, this looks nice. Does this fit me? And, like, let me take this bracelet. But not all the bracelets.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. You wouldn't think, if this would have been written, someone would have been like, come on, like this would never happen.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah.
But it did.
Yeah. And like you said, the fact that they a lot of times just hang out, like they'll just hang out in Paris Hilton's party room.
Yeah.
Because
taking
they
selfies.
Can. Yeah. Taking selfies. And I think.
Which was her real place too.
Yes.
By the way.
And Paris Hilton makes a brief cameo.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, they let her shoot in her real place, which kind of adds a whole nother meta layer to this movie,
I think,
which is interesting. But yeah, they're stealing because, well, we don't know. That's probably what makes the film difficult is we don't know the true motivations for why they're doing this.
Because they can,
because they want to feel like they're close to the celebrities.
Uh-huh.
They want to be friends with them. And also because of the idea of social media where it's not just about stealing this stuff, but it's about stealing it and then showing it off. It's about exhibitionism. It's about taking a picture of yourself in holding this purse.
Right, or it didn't happen.
And posting it.
Yeah.
And how dumb is that?
So
like
dumb.
The fact that the police could just track them so easily because they posted all these selfies on
I can't believe they got away with it for this long.
I know. It was, I think, in real life, it was about 9 months before they were caught.
And they were telling, you know, there was that one
bragging
scene.
About
where they're bragging about it, their friends. And, you know, I was hanging out at Paris this last night.
It was so chill.
Well, and they're stealing the stuff because they can't break into that world. If they could have somehow befriended Paris Hilton or Lindsay Lohan, they probably never would have done anything like this.
Yeah.
Like this was their only way in was to, and that's what makes it so gross too, because it's all fake.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't in this world. I mean, they sort of ended up being in that world and that they had the money to go to the clubs.
Yeah.
But they weren't. And what they were aspiring to be was, you know, reality star. Like, this is who they idolized.
Yeah. I mean, at the beginning, the Rebecca character says, you know, she wants to go to fashion school and then have her own reality show.
Yeah.
Mark wants to have his own lifestyle brand. Like, the people they idolize are mostly people who are just famous for being famous.
Yeah,
not all of them. Orlando Bloom obviously is an actor.
Rachel
Bilson is an actor. But Paris Hilton.
Yeah, she was one of the first ones.
Yeah. Like
she ushered that whole movement in.
And it's so funny how also this movie is kind of a time capsule because most of those people they rob in 2010, 2013 were at the peak of their fame.
Yeah.
And now, like, you haven't heard much from Paris Hilton these days.
Or Orlando Bloom.
Or Lindsay Lohan. Yeah, or Lindsay Lohan. Orlando Bloom's obviously still acting, but he's not, like, at the peak Pirates of the Caribbean level.
No, he's gone away a bit.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's so interesting how quickly fame comes and then fades.
I think it kind of makes this film more interesting.
Yeah, and it was shot at a time when we were peak sort of people famous for being famous.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of that whole idea has faded a little bit, I think.
A little bit.
I think people
have gotten a little smarter about saying, that's bullshit.
Yeah, agreed.
Although the Kardashians really took the baton and ran with it.
Yeah, that's very true. The Kardashians would be an exception. But
I don't know anything about any of this stuff. I've insulated myself so much from that world. But I do know it's out there and that it existed and still exists, you know?
Yeah. Oh, very much still exists.
And I know you're so in that world. I'm like talking to you like you're like, I'm right in the middle of this
stuff. You know what I will say is that I am somebody who, to a certain extent, enjoys fashion.
Uh-huh.
Like, I enjoy dressing a certain way or
you
whatever.
You got a very cool shirt on right now.
Thank you. I'm less concerned with brand names than these kids are, but I can at least understand the idea of how good it feels to be in a shirt that fits you just right and to get a new piece of clothing and the sort of high that comes along with that. And I think Sofia Coppola does a good job of capturing that that high. And, you know, she definitely doesn't have any sympathy for these kids, but there is at least some degree of, I would say, empathy.
Yeah.
Where she allows us to kind of, like that scene where he's dancing in front of the webcam.
Right.
Or just the slow motion scenes when they're partying in the club. There is that sort of that euphoric feeling of just like
there's that one great
being young.
One after, it may be after the Paris Hilton, the first Paris Hilton break in, when they're at the club and they're dancing. And you get some of that sort of dreamy Sofia Coppola stuff that's just like looks so great.
It looks great. And, you know, we've seen it before in her other movies. And here it's kind of being used in a little different way where you can sort of appreciate being kind of in the mindset of these kids a little bit.
Yeah.
That feeling, that rush.
Yeah.
While also being like very turned off by it because of how it came about.
Yeah. And because she's not delivering a really hard judgment upon these characters, she gets knocked for it as a filmmaker, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's fair.
She's
not endorsing it.
No, and it's so easy to just make a film that's like, wagging your finger and saying, these kids are bad and we shouldn't feel bad for them. But, you know, depiction does not necessarily equal endorsement, which we always remember.
Agreed. And we should mention the cinematographer.
Yeah, the cinematographer, Harris Savides, who was his last film.
Yeah, man, so sad. One of the great youngish cinematographers.
Yeah, I believe he passed away during post-production.
Yeah. Brain cancer.
Yeah, that's right. And this was his last movie, and he had done Somewhere with her before that.
Mm-hmm.
Shot Zodiac, David Fincher.
Yeah, he shot a lot of great movies.
Really good cinematographer, and this film, it looks great, and it has a very unique aesthetic that is a little different than Sofia Coppola's other films, I think, while still having her still feeling like it's very much a Sofia Coppola movie.
Yeah, like she usually, like we talked about, does these sort of ethereal, soft, dreamy things. And this is a little more hard-edged with the music and the way it's shot. And it's, like I said, I think it sort of mimics social media and reality TV. And maybe that's why the movie is a bit of a turnoff. But there are those little glimpses, like the club scene and then that great shot when they're in silhouette in Mulholland and the sea of lights and of LA is behind them.
Yeah.
It's a really, really great shot.
It is. Yeah.
What's the best shot of the movie? Let's see what you think.
I mean, I'm guessing we're talking about the long push in.
Yeah.
While they're breaking into, I think it's Audrina Partridge's house. I can't.
That's
sure
the one, man.
Yeah.
It was so cool. It was, if you haven't seen the movie, it's, you know, they're doing all these break-ins, and most of them are, and all of them are just sort of handheld, sort of burglary style. And this one, they set the camera, this great, great house, basically made of glass is what it looks like. And they just set the camera way, 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 way back on a hill. And you don't even, it's one of those slow creeps that you don't even realize the camera's moving in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this glacial push, which is one of my favorite shots, is when like 20 seconds in, you're like, oh shit, the camera's moving.
Yeah.
And they just show these kids in shadow just sort of working their way through the house.
Yeah. And because it's all glass, you can easily see them, their every move. You see them go in, you see them go upstairs.
Yeah.
Root around.
Totally silent.
Totally silent, except for this sort of LA exterior sounds of like coyotes in the distance, plane overhead, crickets chirping, just kind of that atmospheric ambient noise. Yeah.
It's really, really cool.
It's so cool. And it, you know, it's a shot that I'm trying to articulate what it's doing within the movie, you know, and it kind of, to me, emphasizes this. It makes the house feel like a play set, you know?
Yeah.
And these kids are just playing or something. I don't know. And also the idea that there's really no danger here.
Yeah, but it has this, and maybe it's just seeing too much Hitchcock over the years, like that kind of shot with the glass that you're seeing in, and you see them downstairs and then making their way upstairs. And in another movie, you're waiting for the person to be home and to come out around the corner from the bathroom.
That's true.
And to like shoot them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the point, I think. It has this foreboding quality, but nothing ever happens.
That reminds me of another shot in the movie that I really like, which is when they're driving in the car.
Yeah.
And it's a shot that you see in many, many movies because it's a shot where you're anticipating a car wreck happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're singing, they're drunk, they're singing to the MIA song Bad Girls.
Uh-huh.
and you're just waiting. You know something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
And yet she holds on that shot so long that eventually you kind of let your guard down and you say to yourself, oh, okay, she's not going to do the thing where they get in a car wreck. And then as soon as you let your guard down, the car hits and they get T-boned. And then it cuts away and it's like a couple days later and one girl has to do community service, but otherwise they're fine. No consequences.
Yeah, and what is she doing? She's bragging about what she blew on the breathalyzer.
Yes.
She was like, I was like three times the legal limit.
They didn't even know how I was alive, let alone driving.
Yeah. Oh, my God. See, like, to me, this is the judgment. Like, this whole film is a judgment and a critique. Mm-hmm. But it's just she's not doing it in a finger-waggy way, so it doesn't come across as that. Like, that her shooting her saying that line is a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And as the viewer, you're supposed to say, what a fucking creature this person is.
Yeah.
You know?
And I will I'm not going to defend her or these kids, but she Coppola is also saying that it's not just – I mean, these are teenage kids, and it's also a product of the environment they're growing up in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you have parents that say, hey, time for your daily Adderall, and homeschooling them to do vision boards about Angelina Jolie, what else are you going to expect from kids?
Yeah, and that scene at dinner where they're so – the parents are so unaware. And that's, you know, can be true for a lot of parents of teenagers, unaware of what their kids are really doing. But they're just – you know, that when Emma Roberts or Emma Watson is, you know, oh, well – we borrowed this stuff. You know, they're like, where did you get, you know, this the shirt you're wearing or whatever? Yeah. She's like, oh, well, we borrowed this stuff because, you know, we're doing this photo shoot and our friend is a stylist or he's a photographer. And, you know, it's just so easy when you're in that world to explain away the fact that you have $10,000 sunglasses on. The parents don't even question it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, like you borrowed it from your friend, your other rich friend.
Yeah, because his dad has a production company. So, of course,
That
makes
sense.
Yeah,
they're just floundering their way through that. But the radar, the parents are so oblivious. The radar never goes off at all.
Yeah.
And then in the end, when the cops are coming, they're all just like, what are you doing here? What's going on?
Yeah, I love when the cops are coming. I love when they go into Emma Watson's home because Emma Watson – it's like the first time anyone's treating her how she probably should be treated.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a little – to put it lightly, sternly, a little, you know, a little tough love. And they're like, she's like, why do I have to sit down? You know, and she's like, I want to talk to my mom. And it's just,
there was a little bit of delight in the police car when she was like, ow, ow.
You're hurting me.
Yeah. I was kind of like, yeah, good. Because that's probably the most she suffered.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess 30 days in jail is no picnic.
Sure.
But come on.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of jail was it if Lindsay Lohan was in it?
Probably a pretty cushy one. You know, I will say, though, that there isn't really a moral center of this movie.
No.
If there's anything close to that, I would say it's in the character of Mark. Would you agree?
Yeah, for sure.
He's the one that at least always feels kind of like he's the one that doesn't really necessarily want to go on these robberies.
Yeah.
And when he's doing the Vanity Fair interviews in the movie, he seems at least a little bit actually remorseful.
Yeah, there's a little bit of contrition.
And I think... you know, it's weird watching it this time. So much of this movie felt very sad to me.
Yeah.
And especially watching him, his relationship with Rebecca, because they kind of connect at the beginning and they're kind of best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then it quickly, in my mind, turns into an abusive relationship where she keeps being like, let's rob.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to do it. And I'm not saying he's innocent here because he does go along with it, but it is kind of like, man, she's not being a very good friend to you. You know?
No, she's using him. And he's, I totally agree with all that. He is the new kid.
Mm-hmm.
He, in the interviews, he talks about, like, this is the only person you can have the remote shred of empathy for in this movie. He talks about never feeling attractive. I never thought I was good looking.
Yeah.
And he's so quick to jump in. It's that first day. I don't know how it happened in real life, but that first day in school, he's immediately falling into this crowd and going along with whatever. Is it Rachel in the movie?
Rebecca
is saying.
Yeah.
He doesn't not do it. You're right. And he's not off the hook for sure. But you get the feeling that he, like, I don't think any of the rest of them even think what they're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
And I think he does, but he's doing it anyway.
Yeah. He's the one who you maybe are able to closest identify some kind of motive or empathy for, because you can see that sense of wanting to belong.
Right.
Of wanting to have friends, basically, of wanting to have a community of people who, you know, are there for you.
Yeah.
And he does, in some sense, get that.
Yeah.
In a twisted way.
Yeah.
With this group of people. And I also love the fact that the way she depicts him, because he is gay.
Oh, is he?
I think he's meant to be gay.
Well, I couldn't really tell. Like, it seemed like
it's debatable.
Because he never made it past any of the girls.
Yeah.
And I kept waiting for that to happen, like, the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
But she didn't make it super, super obvious either way.
I think there's a scene where they're going to break into his friend's house, mm-hmm. who's out of town. And she says something like, do you know him well? And he said something like, no, but he's pretty hot or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, you see him trying on the pink heels and mm-hmm. things like that.
Right.
But, it's just kind of presented. I don't know. It's just it's a depiction of somebody being gay in a movie that doesn't sort of, that feels real.
Yeah,
you
it doesn't
know?
Center on that for sure.
I don't know. I think it's just kind of a positive depiction of somebody who's a gay person in a movie.
Right, which is ironic because they're like robbing people.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. Totally know what you're talking about. She doesn't make it like a caricature or anything like that, or make him like over the top, you know, with how he's behaving. He's just a kid trying to fit in.
Yeah, and you mentioned where one of the lines he has at the beginning where he talks about how he's not very good looking.
Yeah.
And specifically what he says, I even wrote it down when I watch it because I love the line.
I know what line you're going to say.
I know I'm not ugly. I don't know. I never saw myself as an A-list looking guy.
Yep.
Which just, I mean, there it is, you know.
Yeah.
The fact that he thinks, all these kids think in that kind of vocabulary.
Yep.
That,
I had that same line written
down. The TMZ sort of like only thinking in terms of celebrity, A-list looking guy.
Yeah, you know? And he's the only one. What's interesting is that they're in Hollywood and his dad's in the biz, you know, in like distribution or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yeah, it's kind of cool. Sometimes you get to go to screenings. But none of them are interested in the art of any of it. Like, there's Kirsten Dunst. And it's not like I loved her in blank. It's there's Kirsten Dunst at the club and what is she wearing?
Yeah.
And it feels like that's the mindset of I'm not saying like, all these kids are like that, but these kids are like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I keep always wanting to push back a little bit and not defend the kids, but at least, you know.
Well, you're a millennial.
Right. Yeah. I'm a little older than them, but not that much. And at least acknowledge the fact that it's not just them as individuals, but it is a construct of a society.
Yes.
Of a lifestyle that is presented to us
mm-hmm.
via all forms of media.
That's right.
Not just movies, but social media, Instagram, mm-hmm. Facebook, all these things.
Ideal life.
That allow these types of kids with these types of mentalities and personalities mm-hmm. to develop.
Yep.
Is
absolutely.
What I'm saying.
Yeah. And the whole thing with the, I get to go to screenings and stuff. Like, if it's us, we would think that's awesome because you get to go to a movie screening and see it before everyone else. And like for them, it's you can go to a screening because you might be seen or photographed.
Yeah.
Like it's never, again, like about the art of it. There's not a follow-up question like, oh, interesting. What kind of films has your dad worked on or anything like that?
Yeah.
It's like the red carpets.
Yeah.
Like that's what they're wondering.
Absolutely.
It's really hard not to just go off on that kind of thing. But you're right. I don't think they're victims.
No.
But it is a societal issue.
Right. And the fact that – and it's hard also because they are not victims, nor are the victims victims.
Yeah.
The rich people, the actually really rich people who have entire rooms dedicated just to their shoes.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely a very strong critique in there of just – the
yeah.
fact that this lifestyle is able to exist, you know.
Oh, I agree.
I don't know if I want to say it's a critique of capitalism, but it's.
Well, I mean, I don't think Paris Hilton escapes critique in this movie.
No, no.
Like, she was like, yeah, shoot it at my house because I was a victim of this thing. But when you're watching this stuff, all I could think about is, wow, how much does one person need?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's their money. It's not her money. She inherited it, of course, but she didn't work for it. I try not to yuck people's yums. People like what they like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard not to get a little up on your own high horse.
Yeah, agreed.
But going back to Mark and and empathy for him, I think one line in particular sort of reinforces that is when he's in one of his interviews or depositions, which I don't know if you – I'm sure you noticed is sort of set up in a reality TV diary room sort of way.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought about that.
They
yeah.
always have the diary room where you can just go and like talk to camera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It sort of has that feel. But in one of those interviews, he's talking about her being his first like best friend he's ever had.
Yeah.
And he flat out says, I think that's what the line is. It's like she's the first best friend I've ever had.
Yeah.
And you don't get any of his background, but aside from the fact that he went to the bad boy school because he skipped too much school otherwise, but he seems like a kid without a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Until this.
Yeah. Agreed. And that's what, again, not feeling sorry for any of them, but it does kind of sting a little bit at the end where they show up at the courtroom and she doesn't even look at him.
Yeah, well, one of them says, how does it feel to be a rat?
Like, yeah, because he's the one who kind of, I guess, told the cops everything.
They would have found them all anyway.
Yeah. I mean, when you're posting all this stuff on Facebook, like...
Yeah, I mean, they're on the home security on TV.
Yeah.
And they still do a robbery after that.
Yeah.
A couple, I think.
And maybe there's a sense of, like, they're hoping to get caught, or they at least are hoping to be noticed, you know?
Yeah.
That's why they keep doing it, maybe?
Well, they were finally on the news.
Yeah.
They're so brazen, but it's, again, although it follows a sort of standard crime film, they're not brazen because they're brave or because they're skilled or experienced, because they're not even, you know, they're just walking into homes. They're brazen because they're entitled.
Yeah.
And they don't see any repercussions at the end of this. Like, you get the feeling these kids have never been punished for anything.
Yeah.
And except for maybe having to go to the, you know, the bad person school.
And the fact that, you know, talking about how it follows the standard crime story, except for the epilogue at the end with Nikki, where she's on that interview show.
Yeah,
that's
great.
You know, it's the right up until this point, the hammer has finally come down and they've gotten their sentences. And then, boom, she's on a TV interview show and she's telling everybody, you can hear my side of the story.
Yeah, what's the last thing you hear?
At NikkiMoreForever.com.
Yeah.
And she has parlayed this experience into some minor form of celebrity.
Yeah. Yeah. They all did for a little while.
Yeah.
The gun scene was, and I've seen this in other scenes like this, when an idiot has a gun and they're waving it around, it makes me want to crawl out of my skin. It makes me so nervous and uptight. I can't explain it.
No, exact same reaction. I am so tense.
Me too.
Because I've been in sort of, not quite that way, but I've been in situations where somebody has a firearm.
Uh-huh.
And somebody, you're afraid of them handling it wrong.
Right.
You know, I've been at friends' houses who they're hunters and they have their shotgun in the room.
Uh-huh.
And somebody just picks it up.
I know. And you're immediately nervous.
And you're immediately nervous and the barrel might come near you a little bit. And I freak the fuck out. I can't even, I have to get out of the room.
No, I'm with you. We've read the news stories.
Yeah.
That's how people get their fucking head blown off on accident.
Yeah.
And she's being so careless.
I know.
And you know that. It's even ramped up even further because she's never held a gun before.
Mm-hmm.
She has no idea, you know. I mean, everyone knows you squeeze a trigger, but, like, it's just the carelessness is so off the charts that I had a hard time even sitting through that scene. And I knew nothing happened.
Yeah.
I'd seen it before, and I was still just like, God, somebody. Because he was shoving her arm away, and then she started to get aggressive, like, you going to shove me? You going to shove me?
Yeah.
And I was just like, Emily and I were both just like, oh, my God, please let this end.
And then, it doesn't go off.
But of course not.
In the next scene, the girl who's holding it, I forget the character's name. She's one of kind of the minor members of the Bling Ring.
Yeah, she's the pseudo-adopted sister.
She goes to her boyfriend's and sneaks in.
Uh-huh.
And then they start kissing and the gun goes off.
Right.
And then they just drop it. It doesn't shoot anybody. And then they just go to have sex, which is just kind of...
No repercussions.
No repercussions. Yeah, very good point. No repercussions. Yeah.
It sort of reinforces that. Just, you know, but like every Sophia movie, like, it looks great. It sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
She always does such a great job. Like, I can never wait to see what she does next. Especially as we've seen her career, progress to do, you know, we're going to hit The Beguiled at some point,
mm-hmm.
which is a whole different left turn for her.
Yeah.
But, she's one of those filmmakers that I can't wait to see what happens, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, talking about the cinematography, we mentioned it earlier, but this film was the first film she shot digitally. All of her other films were shot on film.
Oh, interesting.
And I think this is the perfect type of story to shoot digitally,
yeah,
right? Because it has that very, you know, it doesn't have the graininess of film. It has that almost too crystal clear look to it. And I love how she shoots the neighborhoods where it's just all this kind of washed out white or beige, you know? And like the interiors of the homes. And then that's contrasted with the scenes at the clubs or the scenes in the celebrities' homes where there's much more sort of life and color, whereas they're kind of in the suburbs in this very monotonous.
Calabasas is pretty terrible.
I've never been there. Have you been there?
Yeah. It's awful.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's just deep, deep valley. Like, I had to shoot out there a couple of times. It's the only reason you would ever go to Calabasas, unless you live there. Like, there's nothing there except for, you know, the exurbs of L.A., just the sprawl of the Southland. It's depressing.
Yeah. She definitely feels like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Sofia Coppola has a knack for nailing, like, a time and place more than many filmmakers that I've seen. And there are always different times and places. So it's not like she really knows this one thing, like, you know, Woody Allen's Manhattan in New York. Not the movie Manhattan, but, you know.
Yeah.
She's all over the map, but she really nails a time and place. And, boy, certainly this movie with the club scene and just that Deep Valley exurb contrasted with the Hollywood Hills. I mean, it's all very, very spot on and just gives the viewer a real sense of exactly what it's like.
And we've talked about this before, how she's a master at capturing a mood.
Yeah.
And that's also maybe why this film is a little befuddling at first, because it is still just, in some ways, it is another mood piece.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's a mood piece with characters you don't really feel any sympathy for.
Mm-hmm.
But watching it this time, I feel like when I first saw it, I was kind of like, I don't know if this felt very different for a Sofia Coppola film. But then watching it again now, I was like, no, this is very
natural. The same reaction.
Natural progression from Marie Antoinette to Somewhere to this.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't feel out of place in her filmography at all.
I totally agree, man. And the first time I saw it, I thought the same thing. I was like, boy, this is a departure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really not. It's sort of a similar – there's a through line through all her movies, I think. I don't know about The Beguiled yet because I need to revisit that. I only saw it once.
Yeah, same.
That did feel like a departure, although it's still, you know, about a group of young women.
Yeah.
Which, you know, she's always sort of attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the movie goes, you know, they finally get busted. And then they're still so, you know, they're trying on what to wear to court and talking about it. And they're still – the only thing – they're concerned. You get the feeling they still don't even know they did anything wrong.
And I love the shots of them sort of walking in to the courthouse where there's paparazzi all around.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's shot, it feels like watching celebrities walk into courtrooms, or just like the way paparazzi stalk celebrities. Mark's got his black suit on and his sunglasses, and they all kind of are wearing their Sunday best a little bit.
Yeah, I think they enjoyed the moment.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, this is almost like they got what they wanted a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way she handled the court scene, which didn't even happen, was kind of perfect. Like, you see that great shot of the courtroom doors open up, and they're all in there and getting seated, and you think, all right, the trial's about to begin, and then all you see is the door shut and then reopen afterward. Like,
and
that's kind of the point. You don't need to see any of that.
I, like, as a viewer, part of me wants to hear what is said in there. You almost want to hear, like, the judge... lay it to them, tell these kids off. But it actually kind of fits with what she's going for, which is not many consequences. You're not going to get that satisfaction as a viewer of knowing that I'm better than these people.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, man. And it's, I get why it frustrates people.
Yeah.
It frustrated me. I never really thought about that, man. That kind of nails it on the head. Like, you want to sit there and see the judge throw the book at them,
yeah,
and tell them, like, you have no idea about consequences and you're all privileged and you've dressed up to come here, like all the things that you're thinking,
yeah,
as a viewer, and she doesn't give you that.
She denies it because it's easy to do that.
Yeah.
And it's an easy,
totally,
way to ingratiate yourself to the viewer, which,
yep,
I don't think is what she's going for. She's a much more thoughtful filmmaker than that.
Uh-huh. I don't, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
really interesting.
Talking about the critique, the critiques that are in the movie, one thing I just want to mention, which I think is really interesting and another very subtle critique,
mm-hmm,
is the character of, I think it's Chloe, and she's the one, she's blonde, and she's the one that's like friends with the guy who works at the club.
Yeah.
Played by Gavin Rosdale.
Yeah. She's the one that gets in the car crash, the DUI.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what's interesting about her is the way she sort of carries herself,
uh-huh,
is she's one of those white people who loves to appropriate hip-hop culture.
Yeah.
She's listening to Rick Ross. She's singing along to these rap songs.
Yeah.
She's you know, talking about how gangsta she looks.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, all that stuff. And then it isn't until near the end when the police are coming to everyone's house that, mm-hmm, you see where she lives. And hers is,
yeah,
the scene where you don't see the police come in, but you just hear the sirens approaching.
Right.
But she lives in like probably, she's probably the most wealthy one of them all.
Yeah, kitchen.
That kitchen where you see the mom and, uh-huh, the dad in the business suit and the two dogs. And,
yep,
then the maid who is a person of color in the background.
That's right.
And it's just this very, probably the nicest house you've seen out,
yeah,
of the kid
I didn't
where
really
they live.
Consider that. You're right.
And how, you know, she comes from a place of more privilege than any of the other people.
Mm-hmm.
And how she sort of still parlays that into appropriating hip hop culture and trying to, you know, her privilege allows her to do that.
Yeah.
And it's another one of those very subtle critiques that is there,
uh-huh,
but you see, man, she is more than the other kids, a spoiled
That's
rich
right.
kid.
You just know? That one static shot. And that was so well done too, because you hear those sirens in the background.
Yeah.
And no one notices and everyone's going about their morning. And then you hear them get a little bit closer. And she plays it out for a nice long stretch.
Yeah.
And you see her at the kitchen island just sort of like, oh, shit. Like she sort of realizes, you think, like she knows what's coming. And then the other thing that was real telling was Gavin Rosdale, who plays, what was he? He was a club owner, right?
Yeah.
Who moves the Rolexes at one point.
The fence kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, which is why he got busted, I guess. He helped move some of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But his place, which was.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, you still haven't been to LA, right?
I've been there, but briefly.
Okay, well, you need to go again and, like, come out there when I'm there and I'll drive you around and show
Please
you,
like, do.
On a tour of these built in the 50s
yeah.
or 60s LA apartment complexes called, like, you know, the Palm Springs or something. They always have these, like, sunny names.
Yeah.
And that's what this one had. And it's so, like, God, I've been in those apartments before.
Yeah, I was
just all shitty.
I was just in Tucson, Arizona for work,
uh-huh.
and they have a lot of those as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Tucson's
yeah.
pretty cool, huh?
It is actually a cool town. Yeah.
yeah.
I liked it a lot.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you got anything else? Closing thoughts?
Closing thoughts, man. I just got to say, I underrated this one when I first saw it.
Yeah, agreed.
It's a much better film than I originally gave it credit for. If you haven't watched it in a while, watch it. Buy low. The stock is rising on the Bling Ring, I think, because it's a very good film.
Yeah,
it's an excellent
film. I read a few reviews this morning, and many of them are tepid. But this one review, oh, I can't remember where it was. I sort of was really jiving with this guy because he was like, I think it's sort of very underrated, and he said, you know, I think it's one of her best films, even. And everyone got it wrong. Like no one got it. That what she was trying to do here. And I think I sort of agree.
And you know what my kind of closing thought is? And even I actually thought this when I first saw it in theaters. I was thinking, I wonder how this film will play, how it will feel years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, what, 6 years on now?
It already feels a little dated.
Dated not in a way that makes it feel like it's not a good film.
Right.
But it feels very of its time.
Uh-huh.
And like, 20 years from now,
yeah,
how is this movie going to play? There's something, it's almost like watching an Antonioni film like La Ventura or something, where it's about this sort of ennui, this sort of mm-hmm. listlessness of that time and place. And mm-hmm. I'm very curious to, you know, see when we revisit it again 20 years from now.
I think it'll age well.
I think so too. I think it'll age well. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a satire, and I think 20, 40 years from now, it will be. You can look back and, like you said, it's like, oh, America in 2008 or whenever, 2009.
Yeah.
This weird period, because hopefully things aren't like that anymore in 40 years. And it will be this little snapshot of this weird time in our culture where...
It'll probably be, oh, that's how we got to where we are 40 years
from now. Yeah, maybe so. It might be the seed of it all.
Yeah, but I think this film's going to age well. Anyone who's not appreciating it now, mm-hmm. you're going to be eating crow in 2050.
That's right. Take that.
When they're doing best of the aughts lists again.
Yeah, so well done, Sofia Coppola. Much more enjoyed it this time, and I look forward... Well, I mean, we only got two more, right?
Virgin Suicides.
Which Emily's still going to join us for that.
Got to get that
one. And then The Beguiled. So yeah. I'm not sure which one will be next, but I'm looking forward to doing those and then you and I moving on to something else. But I want to complete her, like Casey Bailed on Kubrick, because there's just too many.
Yeah.
We did our nice Kubrick run and then started mixing it up, but she's contained enough. And then her next film that comes out, we should just kind of jump in and do those right away.
I was going to ask you, what does Emily think of The Bling Ring?
She, I think she's sort of with me, like, and us. Like, the first time she saw it, we were both thought it was a little slight and a little not super substantial. And now both realize, like, oh, that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
But she watched most of it last night, ended up going to sleep kind of before the end. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she's on board with us.
Well, Emily, I can't wait to talk about Virgin Suicides with you.
Yeah, we'll get in there. That should be the next one, I think, and then we'll finish with The Beguiled.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, and thank you, Paul, and we'll see you next time. Movie Crush is produced, edited, and engineered by Ramsey Yunt, here in our home studio at Pont City Market, Atlanta, Georgia, for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.